confirmed. It's top secret corporate information, but yes, it's been confirmed. Then we could... Look out! Doug felt Brennart clutch at his shoulders and yank him backwards from the edge of the rill he was about to step over. As the two men staggered backwards several steps, Doug could see that the rill, a snaking crack in the ground, was crumbling along its edge, just where he was about to plant his boot.
"Didn't mean to scare you," Brennart muttered. "What's happening?"
"I'm not sure. It might... Look!"
Thousands of fireflies seemed to burst upward out of the rill. Glittering coldly blue and bright green, the cloud of glistening light expanded in the sunlight, twinkling, gleaming, filling Doug's vision with ghostly light. He was surrounded by the sparkling lights. It was like being inside a starry nebula or a heaven filled with angels. Doug saw nothing but the lights, heard nothing but his own gasping breath. Tears filled his eyes.
"An eruption," he heard Brennart say, his voice filled with awe.
"What is it?" Doug managed to whisper.
"Ammonia, methane. From down below. It seeps up through the rills every now and then. Someday we'll mine the stuff."
The cloud grew and grew, enveloping them in its flickering light. Then it dissipated. As quickly as it had arisen, it disappeared, wafted away into nothingness. The landscape went back to its dead grays and blacks.
"I've been coming up here more than 20 years, said Brennart, his voice hollow, "and I've never seen an eruption before."
Doug could not reply. He was thinking that it was an omen, a sign.
"My welcome to the moon," he said to himself. "You must lead a charmed life, kid."
"It was beautiful," Doug said lamely.
"That it was. It certainly was."
For long moments they stood in silence, each secretly hoping that another seepage of gas would envelop them in the colorful fireflies once again.
"I hope the monitoring cameras caught that," Brennart said at last. "The science people will want spectra and all that."
"The cameras run all the time?"
"Right."
At last Doug gave it up. There would be no more. Strange, he thought, how sudden elation can give way to disappointment so quickly.
"Guess we should start back to the base," Brennart said. He sounded dismayed, too.
"Tell me more about this South Pole business," Doug said, as much to cheer their conversation as any other reason.
"We've got to claim that territory," Brennart said, his tone brightening immediately. "I want to lead an expedition down there and..."
Savannah.
"There's ice down there at the pole," Doug said, brimming with enthusiasm. "Water ice. Mr. Brennart wants to lead an expedition there and claim it for us."
"I've seen his proposals," Joanna said, feeling weary at her son's insistence. She leaned back in her reclining chair. "Brennart's deluged me with video presentations, reports, survey data."
"I want to go with him," Doug said.
Joanna had known he would. Of course he would. That was why she had hesitated, ever since her son had returned from his brief visit to Moonbase, bubbling with excitement about joining Brennart and trekking off to the South Lunar Pole. Now he sat in her office facing her, burning with enthusiasm, hardly able to sit still as they waited for Brennart to show up. She saw Paul's features in her son's face, Paul's boundless energy and drive, and she remembered that Paul had died on the moon. Brennart's proposed expedition to the lunar South Pole had worked its way up through the corporate chain of command and now sat on Joanna's desk. She could approve it or kill it. She knew that if she approved it, her son would stop at nothing to be included in the mission. Misunderstanding her silence, Doug said,
"Mom, all my life I've heard about my father in Moonbase. I want to carry on in his footsteps. I've got to."
"Your freshman classes start in September."
"We'll be back by then. It's my legacy, Mom. All my life I've wanted to get to Moonbase and continue what he started."
All his life, Joanna thought. All 18 years of his life.
"It's the frontier," he told her excitedly. "That's where the action is."
Joanna countered, "Moonbase is a dreary little cave that's only barely paying its own way. I've come close to shutting it down 12 times.
"Shutting it down? You can't shut it down, Mom. It's the frontier. It's the future."
"It's a drain on this corporation's resources." Doug started to reply, then hesitated. With a slow smile, he said,
Mom,
if you won't allow me to go to Moonbase, I'll get a job with Yamagata Industries.
Yamagata?
They're looking for construction workers, Doug said evenly. I'll get to the Japanese base at Copernicus.
That was when Joanna realized how utterly serious her son was. Behind the boyish enthusiasm was an iron-hard will. Despite his pleasant, smiling way, he was just as intent as his father had been.
Douglas, she said, there's much more at stake here than you understand.
He jumped to his feet, startling her. Pacing across the office, Doug replied,
Mom, if we can get water from the ice fields down at the South Pole, we can make Moonbase profitable. We can even sell water to Yamagata and the Europeans. No one's ever gone to the South Pole. It's mountainous, very dangerous.
Doug grinned at her.
Come on, Mom.
Foster Brennart's going to head the expedition.
Foster Brennart? He's a living legend. He's like Daniel Boone and Charles Lindbergh and Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins all wrapped up in one.
Joanna knew Foster Brennart quite well. On the moon, Brennart had distinguished himself as a pioneer trailblazer. He had been there from Moonbase's earliest beginnings, side by side with Paul. On Earth, especially here at corporate headquarters, Brennart was a constant aggravation. He always had some wild scheme to promote, some adventure that he swore was crucial to the survival of Moonbase and the profitability of Masterson Aerospace Corporation. More often than not, his treks into the unknown cost far more than they could ever return. And he was getting wilder, more adventurous with the years. Reckless, Joanna thought. Brennart took chances that seemed outright foolish to her. Now he was pushing for an expedition to the lunar South Pole. He had been at it for nearly 2 years, wheedling and cajoling every time he visited Savannah. Now he had enlisted Doug in his campaign. Joanna felt simmering anger at that. Brennard had taken advantage of the 18-year-old's natural enthusiasm, and now Doug was as frenzied as a religious convert. Brennard had made the moon's South Pole into a holy grail in Doug's young eyes. The trouble was, this time Brennard seemed to be right. The more Joanna studied the possibilities, the more inevitable the idea looked to her. Still, it was chancy, even dangerous. I can't keep Doug on a leash, Joanna told herself, but it all sounds so damnably dangerous. Doug couldn't sit still. He paced between the two little Sheraton love seats to the window, glanced out at the cloudy afternoon, then turned expectantly toward the door.
He ought to be here any minute, he said.
Relax. Foster's never been late for a meeting, said Joanna. I'm sure he'll be on time for this one.
Her intercom chimed.
Mr. Brennart here to see you, said her private secretary.
Send him right in, Joanna said, leaning back in her chair.
Doug was practically quivering as he stood by the window. Foster G. Brennart was accustomed to dominating any room he entered. Tall, athletically lean, he had a thick mane of curly golden hair that he allowed to flow to his shoulders. His eyes were pale blue, and although they often seemed to be gazing at a distant horizon that only he could see, when they focused on an individual, that person felt the full intensity of Brennart's powerful character. He wore a simple sky-blue velour pullover shirt and pale blue slacks. Joanna noticed that he was shod only in leather sandals, no socks.
Foster, she said with a gesture toward Doug, you've already met my son.
Hello, Doug, said Brennart, extending a long arm. Good to see you again.
Doug was surprised by Brennart's sweet high tenor all over again. He somehow expected the lanky six-footer to sound deeper, more manly. Still, Doug smiled with pleasure as he shook Brennart's hand. The older man sat in the love seat facing Joanna.
I presume the subject of this meeting is the South Polar Expedition, he said.
Of course, said Joanna.
The Aitken Basin down there is the most valuable real estate on the moon, Brennart said.
I've watched your proposal discs several times, Joanna said, and read all the tons of material you've sent.
Turning toward Doug, still standing by the window, Brennart touted,
There's a mountain down there, Mount Wasser, that's in daylight all the time. We can generate electrical power at its summit constantly, 24 hours a day, and use the power to melt the ice down in the valleys and pump the water back to Moonbase.
We're producing enough water for Moonbase with the nanomachines, Joanna said.